Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Russia tightening the screws on Europe's energy supply as economic battle between Moscow and the West intensifies. The European operator of the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, ENTSOG, says Moscow has halted gas deliveries to Europe. Russian energy giant Gazprom is citing maintenance issues for slashing the flow, saying a three-day work is necessary at one of the compressor stations. The corporation says it's cutting off Germany's gas supplies for 72 hours. Germany is calling the decision technically incomprehensible and accusing Moscow of using energy as a political weapon. Moscow argues that the Western sanctions over the war in Ukraine are impeding its normal maintenance and repair work and therefore cause disruptions to the flow. Well, we've reached out to political analyst and author Markus Papadopoulos to get his take on the latest halt in Russian gas supplies to Europe. Let's listen in.
The Kremlin could be issuing a reminder to Germany and the rest of Europe of the sheer importance of Nord Stream 1 in terms of European industries and European domestic households. Europe faces not a disaster. Europe faces a catastrophe which could have been averted, because all that we see today in Europe stems from the war in Ukraine, a war which could have been averted. And now, as I said, a catastrophic economic situation is on the horizon for Europe, in which millions upon millions of Europeans either face the prospect of dying because of exposure to the cold elements, or falling into poverty, or becoming homeless. Trying to isolate Russia in the world economically was a catastrophic decision by the Western ruling elites.
Italy's had the EU's lowest growth in average salary for over 30 years. This is a country's grappling with skyrocketing levels of inflation and energy costs. Max Civili reports from Rome.
Italy is coming last among all EU countries when it comes to average salary growth, according to a new study released by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, also known as OECD. The average gross salary in 2021, as stated by the OECD, was an upward estimate of 29,700 euros, which is practically the same amount of earnings recorded in 1991. Italy is also one of a handful of countries not covered in a new EU minimum wage directive to guarantee decent living standards for workers.
Many are struggling to make ends meet, living on starvation wages, particularly those with kids. Our government is dreadful. We must replace our politicians.
I'm paid low wages in the order of 5-6 euros per hour. I worked in the hospitality sector and I work long hours, but I don't make much at the end of the month. Thank goodness I'm still living with my parents.
Italy is crippled by high inflation and skyrocketing energy costs. Inflation in the country reached 8% in June, the highest spike since 1976, with severe consequences on the cost of living.
The considerable spike of the inflation rate triggered by the rising cost of energy is now affecting food prices and weighing very much on families and businesses. Let me say the situation is extremely complex in Italy and in Europe.
Energy prices have risen to historic highs in Italy as wholesale gas prices have surged to skyrocketing levels. Businesses complain energy bills have gone up 10 times compared to last year, and in this scenario, thousands of companies risk going bankrupt in the coming months.
Following the collapse of the Mario Draghi government in July, Italian voters will return to the polls on September 25 amid growing public discontent and profound distrust in politics. According to the latest polls, at least 16 million Italians, or 35% of total electors, are likely to skip the vote. Most of them believe voting is useless. Max Civili, Rome.
The UN Atomic Watchdog Team is on its way to Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear plant. amid growing concerns over a leakage of radioactive substances. The delegation that is headed by the International Atomic Energy Agency's chief Rafael Grossi is set to inspect the Russian-controlled plant. Moscow and Kiev have been blaming one another for shelling the facility. Just days ago, Ukraine's president said Europe was one step away from a radiation disaster when the plant was briefly disconnected from the power grid. However, Russians say radiation levels are normal and the situation there is under control. The plant has been in Russian hands since March. It is, however, being operated by Ukrainian staff. The U.S. dollar has remained the world's top currency when it comes to trade, but its standing is increasingly coming under threat. Countries like Iran, China, and Russia are giving it a run for the money, challenging the standing of the U.S. dollar to be the world's top currency. Iran's central bank has announced that Iran and Russia plan to de-dollarize several sectors in their commercial relations in line with their previous moves.
Iran's central bank says Tehran and Moscow have officially started doing business in their national currencies, adding both countries are considering de-dollarizing other parts of their economic ties. Tehran and Moscow had long been seeking to create a mechanism to replace the U.S. dollar with their national currencies, rial and ruble, as part of a joint de-dollarization agenda, regardless of the tough economic sanctions in place against the two nations. Iran and Russia have both been subjected to tough economic sanctions by Western countries and are determined to deepen their economic cooperation, adding that there are great capacities for increasing the volume of bilateral trade. Several officials in Tehran and Moscow have repeatedly accused the United States of using the dollar as an instrument to wage economic and political war. China is another economic and political power that has opted to move toward de-dollarization. In fact, Iran, Russia, and China have discussed the de-dollarization of their trade for decades and have considered launching an alternative for the worldwide interbank financial telecommunication global network, or SWIFT. Following the breakout of the Russia-Ukraine conflict early this year, U.S.-led Western governments imposed several rounds of financial sanctions on Moscow, including freezing its foreign exchange reserves. The thought that the U.S. may move to confiscate one's assets in case they refuse to accept what Washington dictates has caused more countries to consider diversifying their reserve assets away from U.S. dollar. Consequently, many countries have turned away from European democracies and Washington. Regardless of who wins the Ukraine war, the United States and its allies will be the strategic losers. Russia will probably build closer relations with China and other countries on the Eurasian continent, including India, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and the Persian Gulf Arab countries.
We are seeing a deepening of ties unlike any other time that we've seen before. And ultimately, what this means is that the relationship between Russia and China is no longer being governed by the same economic rules that had governed it prior to this year. That is that Russian rubles are being traded. They're no longer doing business in dollars. And ultimately, that is hurting the United States, and it's going to change the dollar's hegemony.
In recent years, with the increased weaponization of the dollar and Washington's use of the dollar, to sanction the so-called unruly countries in America's eyes, many countries in the world have awakened and begun to experiment trading in their own national currencies.
More governments and central banks are looking into ways to break away from the dollar settlement and payment system following the 2008 financial crisis, which originated in the U.S. and quickly turned into a global catastrophe. Today, Russia, China, and Iran are leading this effort. China and Russia are offering many Asian and African countries ways to relieve themselves from the dominance of the dollar.
Since the U.S. has been using the dollar and sanctions as a weapon to hurt other economies, its competitors have no obligation to help the U.S. maintain the dollar hegemony. The dollar's decades-long dominance has placed America in a strong position to dictate the terms of global trade and finance for the last 70 years. But this time, Russia wants to do something different, as Moscow is determined to launch a counter-offensive against Western sanctions and the dollar-centric global financial system. Following the unprecedented Western financial and economic sanctions, Moscow asked all unfriendly countries that are imposing sanctions on it to pay for their fuel purchases in Russia's rubles. The measure immediately helped stabilize the value of the ruble and significantly diffused the negative impact of Western sanctions. In addition to crude oil and natural gas, some economists have suggested Moscow extend the requirement for importers of Russia's grain, chemical fertilizers, and other products to transact in rubles instead of dollars or euros.
I think what we're witnessing now is the birth of a multipolar world order, and what that means ultimately is that after the collapse of the Soviet Union in the late 80s and early 90s, the United States became the single hegemonic global power. And what we are seeing now is that the United States, after two decades of brutal wars in the Middle East, in North Africa, of the rampant imperialist expansion and regime change policies and nation building policies of the US regime, that now Russia, China, Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, South Africa, many countries are coming together and saying no more to U.S. Expansionism.
Russia and China certainly are engaged in a bid to change the U.S. rules-based order, but instead of trying to replace one hegemony, that is the dollar, with another, they are encouraging the rest of the world to assert their autonomy and independence.
Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian says that Tehran seeks stronger guarantees from the U.S. for the revival of the 2015 deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. Amir Abdollahian made the comments in a presser with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov in Moscow. The official also called for boosting bilateral relations between Tehran and Moscow. This is Amir Abdollahian's third trip to Russia since taking over as the foreign minister. And Mikhail Gorbachev, the first and last president of the Soviet Union, has died at the age of 91. According to Russian media, Gorbachev died on Tuesday evening in Moscow after a serious illness. Gorbachev ruled the Soviet Union from 1985 until its collapse in 1991. He was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1990 for his role in bringing an end to the Cold War. President Vladimir Putin has expressed his deep condolences on his death. World leaders have also paid tribute to him. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has sent a message praising Gorbachev as a one-of-a-kind statesman who changed the course of history. Well, the U.S. government says it's in possession of evidence showing that Donald Trump and his team tried to obstruct a probe into the discovery of classified documents at the former president's residence. The Justice Department says government records were likely concealed and removed from a storage room at Trump's Mar-a-Lago home. The department has accused Trump of obstructing justice by failing to return top-secret documents to the government. Trump has been calling for a federal judge to appoint a special master to review the records in question. The court hearing will be held on Thursday. Earlier this month, the FBI searched Trump's residence in Florida. The agents found 33 boxes containing more than 100 classified records. The former president and his Republican allies accuse the FBI of being corrupt and call the search nothing but political retribution. And today is the first anniversary of the day when the last pair of American boots on the ground left Afghanistan, bringing down the curtain on 20 years of corruption and completing what was seen as an embarrassing U.S. troop withdrawal. The Taliban have declared the occasion a national holiday. Earlier, we spoke to our correspondent in Kabul, Abdullah Mirzad, about this day's special events. Let's listen in.
The celebration started last night with very much of gunfire, celebratory gunfires, and some fireworks. And today, there were army shows all over the streets of Kabul, and especially in the former American base of Bagram, which is now in the hands of Taliban. There were Taliban dignitaries, and the Taliban forces were marching. There was helicopters flying on the base. There were tanks. They showed Katyushas, And to our wonder, some Scud missiles, some old Scud missiles also were there. Among what they declared, what they said, Mullah Muhammad Hassan Akhund, the deputy prime minister of IEA, Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, said that the withdrawal of US-American forces is a blessing for Afghanistan, and the Taliban forces must appreciate this day, and they must try to do their best to help Muslims and Afghan people.
Moving on to Iraq, where the prime minister is threatening to step down if the ongoing political chaos is not resolved.
And I warn that from now on, if they want to continue to stir up chaos, conflict, discord, and strife, and not listen to the voice of reason, I will take my moral and patriotic steps by announcing the vacancy of the position of Prime Minister at the appropriate time, according to Article 81 of the Iraqi Constitution, and hold them accountable before the Iraqis and before history.
Mustafa al-Kadhimi also said a commission of inquiry will be formed to probe the origin of the weapons used in the recent deadly clashes in the capital, Baghdad. Chaos broke out on Monday after cleric Muqtada al-Sadr said he was quitting politics in response to a prolonged political deadlock in the country. He criticized other political leaders for not heeding his calls for reform. Sadr's supporters broke into the Green Zone and stormed the presidential palace. The unrest prompted a nationwide curfew and the closure of government organizations. The ensuing clashes resulted in nearly 30 deaths and left hundreds of people wounded. Later on Tuesday, the situation calmed down after Sadr called on his supporters to withdraw from the streets.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bazaar.
The construction industry has continuously had a series of revolutions throughout history. Technological advancements have influenced the construction sector too, from durable concrete in ancient structures to smart windows that automatically open and close based on light exposure. Some materials evolved with time, others are new to the industry and address natural disasters while reflecting changing lifestyles and environmental values. Still, other materials are born out of a need to reduce construction costs. In a nutshell, structures and their materials are the building blocks of society and economic expansion.
Hello everyone, Ali Reza here, welcoming you to a brand new edition of Bazaar. This week, we are taking you on a journey through Iran's mammoth building construction industry while highlighting some of the country's recent developments in this sector. Plus, we will check out its market as a whole and the construction industry's contributions to the national economy. So, let's get started.
To understand the enormity of the construction industry, we visited the 22nd Annual International Building and Construction Exhibition in Tehran. Because the exhibition was sprawled over nearly 4 hectares of land, one day is not nearly enough for visitors to see the entire expo, so it ran for 3 days. This exhibition is one of the most important events in its industry. We caught up with a few companies at the exhibit to see what they were offering. Our first stop was at a booth held by a company that makes ceramic tiles. They also export their products to numerous countries. Next, we stopped by a company specializing in manufacturing faucets and kitchen and bathroom attachments. It also purchases most of its raw materials from inside the country. Like many we have seen at the event, this company has created many job opportunities directly and indirectly. Plus, it uses the latest machinery to make high-quality products that compete with foreign brands. Now, many might not think twice about it, but Iran's faucet and fixture production have been booming. So we spoke with another company that has been exporting these items for years.
Industry participants say this year's Building Expo was much larger than last year's, meaning that Iran's construction industry has expanded in recent years, displaying the country's various existing and emerging capabilities in the field. Statistics show that last year some 900 domestic companies participated in the events. Also, foreign companies were present, offering their goods and services.
This year's exhibit hosted hundreds of foreign companies from Germany, Australia, Turkey, China, Spain, Italy, South Korea, and Malaysia, just to name a few. A wealth of products were showcased at the expo, from road and construction equipment to stones, sanitary supplies, heating and cooling systems, lifts and elevators, and so much more. Rarely has any industry offered so much versatility and variety of products as the construction industry. Events like this one offer a platform for the exchange of ideas, examining markets and opportunities for collaboration to create new products needed in the market. Next, we stopped by a display for a company specializing in making various inset kitchen products. We asked them about their goods and approach to challenges posed by the US sanctions. Walking through the exhibit, we ran into a company that makes metal fittings for stairs, windows, and areas that require spatial separations.
All things considered, the construction sector has been significant for the Iranian economy. The sector is divided into two main parts: government infrastructure projects and the housing industry. The construction industry has been thriving due to national and international investment to the extent that it is now one of the largest in the West Asia region.
This sector suffered a lot after the US withdrew from the 2015 deal and reimposed sanctions against Iran. These measures choked construction materials imports. As a result, the steady flow of things like metals to Iran was seriously hampered and eventually halted altogether. But despite the bans, this industry continues to grow and is also one of the few that exports services to other countries. Based on the Association of Iranian Exports of Technical and Engineering Services, Iran currently has the potential to export engineering services worth $40 billion annually. The country already exports these services to countries around the Caspian Sea, its bordering neighbors, South and Central America, North Africa, and South Asia. Some construction projects include sewage treatment plants, dams, and energy plants. According to the Ministry of Industry, Mining, and Trade, Iran is self-sufficient in construction material production. Steel, glass, and cement are abundantly produced in the country. Moreover, the surplus of these items is exported to countries worldwide. Government officials say they have plans to expand exports to Iran's trade partners, including China and Russia. For example, the Ministry of Industry, Mine and Trade says it plans to sell upwards of $3 billion worth of construction materials to Russia alone. As a whole, the government views the construction sector as a feasible alternative for generating foreign revenues and diversifying the country's economy away from oil profits.
Alright, now it's time to check out this week's special feature of Bazaar. So let's see where Sarah has been this past week.
In an ever-increasing technology-driven world, city streets are becoming more and more congested than ever before, while connected and autonomous technologies in vehicles are also on the rise. Such safety concerns pose a significant challenge for city planners and traffic engineers to improve mobility, safety, and efficient use of roadways now and in the future. When you are driving to work, or especially going on a road trip, you need to be fully alert to avoid the hidden cameras all across the road from catching you or costing you a damage. Well, sometimes this can be really irritating, but have you ever thought of the significant impacts they have in the most challenging situations? Today, we decided to take you to a company active in the field of intelligent transportation system in Sharif University of Technology. Let's go check it out. With creating intelligent transportation systems, the research and development team of the students in Sharif University of Technology has created a smart traffic software for processing related information. These smart systems are mounted beside or over the roads to detect motoring offenses, including speeding, vehicles going through a red traffic light, vehicles going through a toll booth without paying, or for recording vehicles inside a congestion charge area. All these violations are detected 24/7 using traffic data analysis system.
We as Connect Group started to work around 10 years ago here in Electronic Research Institute in Sharif University of Technology. Back then, our main expertise was focused on image processing and embedded systems and also IoT devices for smart cities and buildings. Our products are all knowledge-based and divide into three main categories. The first one is machine vision and embedded systems. The other part of the products are based on IoT or Internet of Things products. And the third one is the big data analysis and data mining. These products are all implemented on a secure and highly customized Linux operating system. Another line of our products are based on IoT devices, such as the smart gateways and actuators. We have exported these products to two foreign countries, and also the third line of our products are based on data mining and big data analysis. These softwares and products are mainly used in road maintenance and transportation organization and also some major municipality offices. These softwares helps a lot in extracting useful patterns out of millions and billions data in traffic control centers and help managers and also managers and experts in traffic control sensors to extract practical and beneficial data from these smart cameras or sensors throughout the city.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, this intelligent software was created for the smart camera system. When it comes to cameras, we have various kinds of traffic enforcement cameras, such as speed violation detection camera, red light camera, road safety camera, and so many more for plate detection. But that's not all. This company also creates IoT devices or Internet of Things. These are intelligent gateway camera systems for buildings and image processing, with the aim of providing a better living environment for people and reducing energy consumption. All right, now it's time to take a closer look at the smart camera system and see how it works. There are thousands of smart camera systems all across the country that actually function with the software created in this company. Now, let's take a look at one of the smart camera systems created in this company. Well, just like human, this smart system is created and is made of eyes, and if we delve inside, it's also made of a powerful brain. Well, the eye of this system is the industrial camera, which is created in different versions depending on the geographic location of the camera. For example, the one we have here has been created with a hardware design that protects against a heat wave. Anyway, this camera captures the images from the front side of this smart system and sends these images to the processing board, which functions as the brain part of this smart system. And finally, the data is transmitted from the intelligent software of the smart system to the traffic control centers all across the city.
The Connect Group was founded in some 8 years ago, I think. And the main focus of the group was on cutting edge smart technologies, for example, in machine vision, machine learning, artificial intelligence, data analytics, Internet of Things, and stuff like that. Later on, we used these technologies in more specific areas, for example, in intelligent transportation systems and various aspects of smart cities, like smart buildings, smart automation. And we have other countries around us that they are interested in some of our products. Our main goal for the future is to actually connect all the intelligent aspects of the city together. For example, if you have something smart in the in a villa or in an apartment, we connect it to the road, we connect it to the work office, and all these things all together to for one brain actually to decide for the optimization and improvement of several aspects of the these systems.
Employing the latest smart technologies as well as artificial intelligence, this company focuses on smart city and smart buildings, and ultimately, it aims at city management without human involvement. Presently, their products are available in almost 17 provinces in Iran. Traffic technologies continue to evolve and scale into solutions in mega cities. Finally, this paves the way to optimizing traffic flow and improving efficiency and safety on the roads. Well, there is no way to violate the traffic rules. The latest technologies in the modern world today, including the smart camera system, can detect and improve the wrong behaviors of drivers in the society. And by the end of the day, they can create a smarter, safer, and more sustainable transportation ecosystem. I've been Sarah Dema, and I'll see you next time.
We are getting close to the end of the program, but before we go, let's check out some news and trends in the construction industry and beyond. Iran is known for its creative experts in the field of engineering, so it is no surprise that last year the country exported technical and engineering services valued at nearly $2 billion.
That's based on Iran's Trade Promotion Organization. These services were sent to countries in Southeast Asia, North Africa, and neighboring regions. For example, 57 major infrastructural projects were carried out by dozens of Iranian companies in Iraq alone. Furthermore, the organization says with more planning and resources, the country can quickly increase exports of technical and engineering services to $20 million annually. In the last 15 years, Iran has taken on some 900 construction projects in 21 countries worth $32 billion.
Unconventional use of construction material. An Iranian architect has transformed a widely used construction material into a unique form of window. It is a type of spectacled brick that is a solid block with a circular aperture at its core which filters in the light.
The architect says the high density of buildings and city regulations in Tehran has limited sunlight exposure in office and commercial buildings. The developer explains the special brick in this project allows sunlight penetration even in parts of the building where windows are not permitted by city codes. Additionally, these unique windows can be adjusted to closed or open positions to optimize daylight exposure. The advantage of this brick is that it can absorb less air pollution and help filter out the noise from the motorways.
Increasing market reach. And let's conclude with Iran's efforts to expand its market reach and trade of goods with its neighbors. The country is organizing 6 exhibitions in the Qatari capital, Doha, that will be held during this year's FIFA World Cup event.
5 exhibitions will introduce Iranian handcrafts, such as hand-woven carpets, home decorations, and much more. Additionally, 1 will be held for construction materials and technical engineering services. This is significant for increasing bilateral relations and trade between the two nations. Government officials also say a direct shipping line has been launched between Iran and Qatar to help with the transportation and distribution of goods.
That wraps up our program for today. Also, if you have a topic that you're interested in, you can send us your thoughts and suggestions via email. We always enjoy hearing from you. On behalf of the entire team, thank you for tuning in and take care. And bye-bye. Thank you.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi. The second key of life that we need to have, and it is an absolutely essential to our success in this world and in the next world, is seeking knowledge. Now, before, the first key was to contemplate and reflect. Now is to seek knowledge itself. Life itself would not have moved, and humanity would have not developed, and we would have not advanced in the way we are now if it wasn't for knowledge. And sadly, sometimes we see that the knowledge we have and the things that we have is made by the few. As humanity, if we look at it as a whole, we could have done so much work. Give you an example. Now we have millions of youth who have full active minds, who have full active bodies. And instead of putting this activity and this energy in trying to change the world, in fact, they're sitting behind PCs and behind consoles and playing games. And I was looking at some scary statistics in this regard, where they said only a few hours of playtime that the youth do online, they could, with obviously with that amount of time, with that amount of manpower, they could build civilization in a matter of days. And that's just crazy in a sense to see that we are just wasting our energy. So what I'm trying to say here is, whatever we have today is the action of few, not the action of many. So when we look at electricity, for example, it was an invention of one man. When you look at, for example, building houses or building cars or, you know, all the things that we have, usually you find one person invented it and then just kept developing itself. So we need all of us, we need to seek knowledge and put it into action and try to advance ourselves and advance the human beings around us as well. And obviously we'll reap the rewards in this world, and we will also reap the rewards in the hereafter. From here, we look at the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt salamullah alayhim, and they talk about the importance of seeking knowledge. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he says, you have to be in two states, either seeking knowledge or being knowledgeable yourself. So you have no other option. Either you are a scholar and giving knowledge, or you are seeking knowledge. And he says, I warn you, and this is to me and to you from the word of the Prophet himself. And he says, do not be a person who wastes his time in vain and in entertainment and seeking pleasure. Lahiyan, just wasting time, entertaining yourself. Mutaladdidan, and just going after your desires. Now, these two would make a human being below animals. The first two will make a human being below the angels. Let us take a short break, then we continue, inshallah.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. We were talking about the importance of seeking knowledge. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says, when it comes to knowledge, you have to go out of your way and do not stop at a point, even if it means you have to seek knowledge from people who you do not deem appropriate or good. For example, he says, take wisdom even from non-Muslims. Because non-Muslims are human beings in the end of the day. They have brains, they have active minds, they have good things. So we take the wisdom from them. Not the teaching of Islam. There's a different thing. Because sometimes people confuse the teachings of Islam with wisdom. When it comes to the teachings of my Islam and of my faith, I have to take it from the right sources. But when it comes to wisdom and information, general information, I can take it even from the mushrikeen. And even Amir al-Mu'mineen, he moves on a step further and he says, خُذِ الْحِكْمَةِ, take wisdom, even if it is from the mouths of those who are considered to be what? Insane and crazy. Because sometimes the crazy people, they say things and they do things that even me and you sometimes do not think of. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, obviously, he's trying to teach us a lesson by such a thing. So Islam emphasizes so much on the importance of knowledge and the importance of seeking knowledge. And if we apply this method of Islam and this teaching of Islam, we would definitely advance. If you look back in history, you see that the most advanced nation in fact, was Islam. During the golden, as they called the golden age, Islam was the most advanced. But sadly, we went backwards. And most of the inventions that we have today was actually invented by Muslims. The optics, the engine, movement, the time, everything was an Islamic invention. But we stopped, sadly, because we decided to go towards pleasures and desires and wasting time and entertainment rather than seeking knowledge. Let us take a short break and we continue right after. Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. We are talking about the importance of seeking knowledge. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, he says, عَلَيْكَ بِالْعِلْمِ وَالْأَدَبِ. Go, learn, seek knowledge and morality. Why, ya Amir al-Mu'mineen? Why should I seek knowledge and morality? He says, فَإِنَّ الْعَالِمَ يُكَرَّمْ. For the scholar is glorified. وَإِن لَمْ يُنْتَسِبْ. Even if he had no lineage. If you're a scholar, if you're an alim, if you're giving back to the world, you'll be glorified by everybody. وَإِن كَانَ فَقِيرًا. Even if he was what? Poor. وَيُكَرَّمْ وَإِن كَانَ حَدَثًا. And he's glorified and respected, even if he's young. If you have knowledge, if you have akhlaq, morals, then you will be respected and honored by everybody, whether you are poor, whether you have no lineage, or whether you are young. And you can see that in our daily life today. Those who succeed and exceed and excel in their fields of knowledge, regardless of where they come from, or their color, or their race, people start to respect them and give them the adequate honor and respect that they deserve. And they get medals and they get, you know, trophies and so on and so forth. So we need to seek knowledge just like we've been told by the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. We'll leave it here and we will continue in episodes to come. Until then, take care of yourselves. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran says it needs stronger guarantees to have a sustainable deal to revive the JCPOA and calls on the UN nuclear agency to close its, quote, politically motivated probes. Nord Stream's operator says Russia has halted gas deliveries to Europe as a fallout from the Ukraine war raises fears of a painful energy crunch across the continent. Also on our headlines, the U.S. Justice Department says it has evidence showing Donald Trump's team deliberately concealed classified documents while FBI agents were trying to retrieve them.